Hello and welcome to In the Booth on your official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. I'm Brendan Batchelor, as always joined by Randeep Janda. We call the Canuck games for you here on the radio, and we host this show every week as well. And Randeep, there was so much optimism coming into the season. The Canucks had a strong training camp. They were mostly healthy. Obviously, Joshua and Demko remained out of the lineup for the season opener against the Flames. Connor Garland was able to get back in. JT Miller got into the last preseason game and was able to play. And the Canucks had like the best first period you could have imagined to start the season against the Flames. Things haven't gone as rosily since then. They drop the season opener on Wednesday in overtime at the hands of the Flames. They then also take a lead into the third period on Friday against the Flyers and lose that game in the shootout. So 2 points from your first two games is not a bad result by any means, but I think the way it happened has some people in Vancouver a little bit worried as they get set to head out on a four-game road trip.
Well, look at it this way, Batch. It could be worse. You could have a -9 goal differential like the Edmonton Oilers and get smoked in your first two games. No, all jokes aside, for Vancouver, and Vancouver's not the only team, it's getting that 60-minute effort right off the bat is challenging. And that first game you mentioned, of course, against the Calgary Flames, you have that game almost in hand, and it feels like just, you know, to play a solid 40 minutes, really 20 minutes, and then the final 40 was not good enough for the Vancouver Canucks. You know, you maybe look at it to say, hey, we have this one in the bag, and you stop skating a little bit. You don't have your defensive game, and you don't stick to the details. The second game, I thought, was a much better game for Vancouver through 40, but when they needed to put that team away, both times they were unable to do so. And early on in the year, that is something that we see across the league. So it's not a great look for Vancouver. Let's be honest. Rick Tocchet will not be happy that two games that really in a lot of ways should have been wins. Calgary, they had a 3-goal lead twice. And with Philadelphia, you know, the Vancouver Canucks of last year with a 2-1 lead heading into the third period, or, you know, having that 2-1 lead in the third period was absolute money. This was a team that won games and had a fantastic record with a lead after 40 minutes. So it's not what you want, but one thing we do have to keep in mind is it's early in the season. This is a team that had some roster turnover. They're trying to play a new way to a certain extent by pushing the pace, and there will be situations where they're going to have some growing pains, and I believe we're seeing that right now.
Yeah, and also I think there is a tendency to overanalyze a two-game stretch because it's the first two games of the season. When any other two-game stretch like this, I don't think we would be micro-analyzing to this extent. Like, for example, I thought they were clearly the better team through 60 minutes against the Flyers. And, you know, whether you want to credit Samuel Erson, who I thought was very good, or you want to say they need to bear down on their chances or their power play needs to find a way to score for them, like, those are all fair criticisms. But I don't know, like, what would you say at this point? Not including the overtimes, because those aren't real periods, but they've played 6 20-minute periods, and I would say they've been the better team in 4 of them at this point. Maybe you could argue that. And ultimately, the results have gone against them, and there are reasons for that, but I'm not going to sit here and push the panic button just yet.
No, and I think one area for the Canucks that they have to be looking at internally to say is that power play. You mentioned it, right? Like, you get a power play goal in that game against Philadelphia, we're probably talking about their first win of the season and how, you know, that was their perfect response to the Calgary game. If you look at the 5-on-5 game, Vancouver handled that game. Through 40 minutes, Philadelphia didn't have a high danger chance at all. It was minimal. And in the third period, of course, Philly comes with a push. Vancouver eats a little bit of pressure. They also have a little bit of trouble moving the puck out of the zone, and Philly scores a goal, and it's pretty much, you know, that's that story, and they're back into the game. But I agree. I think the Philadelphia game was the strong one. We were talking about that in the intermissions during the game call as well, Batch, of, all right, this is more to the Canucks' style of play. But here's the thing. As that game went on, Vancouver's offensive opportunities kind of dried up. And in a situation when you're up a goal like that, you want to put that game away. So it's not a time to overreact, but of course, they had the chance to win. They had the opportunity to get that game and pick up the 2 points. Instead, they walk away with one. And you talk about, you know, why the overreactions are going, and we'll talk about what's real and what's not real with overreactions a little bit later on. The reason that we are hearing and seeing reactions like this from about this Vancouver Canucks team is that there's actual expectation in the city, right? There's a lot of talk about taking that next step, but that next step doesn't come at the beginning of the season, right? Sometimes when you have players that are new to the system, you have a new system that's trying to be employed with playing with more pace, there are going to be elements of that progress doesn't happen immediately. So I get that. I get the angst in the market to a certain extent and the expectation to have everything immediately. But with a 82-game schedule, you kind of got to be careful with that, right? Because this is a long grind.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And, you know, you're right to speak to the expectations. And I think one of the interesting things that we're going to follow as this season carries along is how those expectations impact the way this team deals with that. Because this is something that Rick Tocchet talked about pretty early on last year, if I'm not mistaken, where he talked about dealing with prosperity. And for a group of guys that had not had success for most of the last decade, the guys that had been in the organization, you have a little bit of success, you start feeling good. How do you deal with that? How do you deal with the fact that people in the media are picking you to do well? How do you deal with the fact that you're, you know, actually having a career year individually? And, you know, that I'm sure will be a thread that will follow as the season goes along. And I'm not going to sit here after two games and be willing to say anything as far as, you know, oh, they're resting on their laurels because everybody thinks they're a shoe-in to be one of the top three teams in the Pacific Division or anything like that. But, you know, you brought up the Oilers earlier, and I think it's an interesting point. Edmonton started poorly last year. They've started poorly again this year. And when you have some success, and obviously the success the Oilers had, you know, is quite a lot more than the Canucks last year, going all the way to Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final, I do wonder if, you know, you have a growing realization that Game 2 of 82 or Game 37 of 82 or whatever, you know, it doesn't have the same level of importance on it that Game 7 of the second round did last year, and whether that affects the way you approach it at all, not consciously, but subconsciously, because you've been in those big games, in those big moments. And whatever you want to say about trying to get out to a strong start to begin the season, these first two games have not been that. And, you know, ultimately, at the end of the day, this team is going to be judged not on what they did in the first two games of the season, but what they do at the end of the season in April and May and beyond, potentially. So, you know, I'm sure, like, from our perspective covering the games, we understand that. The guys playing on the ice are only human, too, and I do wonder if there's something that plays into that where, you know, if you lose a regular season game, it's not the end of the world, as opposed to losing Game 7 against Edmonton last spring.
Yeah, they have to ramp up as well. And even though we hear that in preseason of, hey, veterans ramping up, hitting the intensity. Let's take JT Miller for an example, right? You play one preseason game, and you kind of shake off the rust in that game, but it's not like you're ready to go. And mentally, the first couple of games are still going to take some time. Batch, like Game 10 is probably where we're going to start to see guys get settled in. And even though as much as we want to see them in Game 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, feel like it's midseason form, there's a reason the phrase is called midseason form and not early season form, right? Because it still takes a while for these players to get there. The other thing I would say is I think with this team, there is an element of, hey, this is a marathon. I'm not saying that they're not intentionally trying. Obviously, a team wants to win. When you play a solid 40 minutes against Philadelphia and you've got that lead, you're trying to win that game. When you clamp down defensively and you're winning the majority of puck battles for 40 minutes, you want to win that game, but you're not quite there potentially, maybe physically. Maybe that sense of urgency isn't there early in the season. Against Calgary, similar way, it was a little bit more disorganized in that game, where they were chasing it. They were, you know, defensively, we could see some breakdowns. I thought there's progress in the second game. With time, that's going to become better. But I think with this team, a team that understands, all right, the Stanley Cup or the playoffs are not awarded in, you know, game one or two. You have to work towards something. Even, you know, the Oilers example, as bad as it's been for them, -9 goal differential. Buffalo Sabres, who up until recently, you know, they beat the Florida Panthers, but prior to that, they hadn't won a game. It's bad. You know, you want that W, and the way you're losing, it's still a couple of games into the season, where with the Canucks, you have veterans on that team that are saying, hey, we didn't play all that well. Maybe in that room, they're saying, we don't have that killer instinct right now. We didn't put teams away. Our power play is not fully clicking yet, but we still got 2 out of 4 points. Like I'm still of the, in two games, and I don't think it's tough to be glass half full because this team, yeah, should have probably won. The conversation of 4 out of 4 points is not that far away. So even though they're not fully there yet and we can maybe see it and they're not playing a full 60, they were probably a few minutes away, one period away from being 4 points out of 4. So it will take time. It will take time for them to ramp up to get to that. I think the next homestand will show us where this team's at. The next road trip is important, right? You're on the road. It's a team bonding and building exercise to a certain degree. How do you come back? Are you healthy? And how are you feeling when you hit the ice here at Rogers Arena again?
Yeah, a couple things on that. One, you're absolutely right. Like, you're a Kevin Lankinen and shootout save and a Canuck overtime goal in the first game away from having two wins. And even though they weren't oil paintings, if they had found a way to win both of these games in overtime or the shootout, then people are riding high. Hey, look, the Oilers have lost their first two. The Canucks have won their first two. They're already building a lead in the division. Like, those are the conversations we would be having if a couple of small things in these first two games had gone for Vancouver. And I think bringing up the road trip is a really good point, and we're going to get into that more as the show carries forward here. But remember last season, the Canucks had those great wins against the Oilers back-to-back, home-and-home to start the year. And then they went out east, and they had a little bit of trouble in Philadelphia, and they had to find their feet away from home. But by the time they got back from that road trip, they had started to find their game. They were starting to play the way they wanted to, and that's where things really took off after a couple of early bumps in the road on a very similar road trip, actually, where they went to Philadelphia and they went through the Florida teams as well, and we're going to see them do that in the opposite order this coming week with Tampa and Florida and then Philadelphia before they finish against Chicago and return home for some home games later in the month of October. But, you know, a couple of shots go a different way. You know, a puck hits the post and goes in instead of hitting the post and staying out. And the Canucks might be 2-0 and might be heading out on the road trip flying high. But I do think, and, you know, this is something that we can get into in a few moments in a bit more depth, I do think it's going to be really interesting to see how they manage this road trip, how things go for them. It's very often that the first game you head out east is one that you struggle with a little bit because of, you know, the long flight and the time zone change. And it's the first time you're doing a trip like that in the season. And, you know, it probably doesn't help the Canucks that this trip is almost as far as you can travel, if not as far as you can travel, going from the West Coast in Vancouver all the way down to Florida and far east. So, you know, this is going to be interesting. I think, well, you know, I don't want us to read too much into the way this road trip goes because of all those factors, but I think we'll learn a lot about this team and continue to learn about them as this road trip progresses.
For sure, and especially for a team that, even though the core pieces are still there from last year, you have Heinen, DeBrusk, Desharnais, go through the lineup, Forsberg, you know, Kevin Lankinen. These are new faces on this team. We see the on-ice, and, you know, talking to the guys in the room, Batch, as you and I do, we can tell there's a camaraderie there, but that first road trip of the season generally gets players a little bit closer together. You're having a little bit more time together and understanding your teammates and having those conversations. And, you know, video sessions, on ice sessions in Vancouver are great, but this is another opportunity to really buy in and lock into the team identity. And even though this team had an identity last year, they don't have one right now, right? And every year you have to reset, every year you have to bring something new. And this year, they're trying to be faster, push the pace a little bit more. That identity has not been set. So trips like this play a vital role in doing that.
You're listening to In the Booth on your official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. On the other side, we will continue to preview the road trip. We'll talk about things that might be sustainable from what you've seen from the Canucks in the first couple of games, things maybe you need to have a little bit of concern about, and we'll get an update on what the lineup might look like when they start the road trip Tuesday against the Tampa Bay Lightning after they practiced in Vancouver on Saturday. That's all still to come on In the Booth on your official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to In the Booth on your official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Brendan Batchelor and Randeep Janda with you. This show does live as a podcast as well, so if you're listening on the radio, if you've missed any part of the program, you can subscribe to the Canucks Central podcast feed. You get the daily show with Sat and Dan. You get every Canucks postgame show, and you get In the Booth every week as well. We're going to talk about the road trip coming up, Randeep. We're also going to get to the mailbag and answer some questions from the listeners. But let's kind of put a bow on the two-game homestand to start the season and the things that maybe we learned about this team coming out of those games, things that you might be able to apply over the longer term rather than, as we talked about, overanalyzing a couple of losses that, you know, were even beyond 60 minutes and very close games ultimately. So I'm going to start, and I'm going to say that I think the Canucks' struggles defensively have been blown out of proportion in large part because of the results. And I'm going to steal a line from Mike Halford on our morning show, who said this coming out of the game against the Flames, where he said the Canucks weren't good defensively, but they weren't six goals against Calgary bad defensively. And part of that shifts the blame to the goaltending. And, you know, we could talk about Artur Shelov's, and I think he certainly didn't have a good night. And if you're trying to do sort of a stock watch coming out of the first couple of games, Kevin Lankinen's stock has gone up after his performance against the Flyers. Shelov's stock has gone down a little bit after a season opening struggle for him against the Flames. So putting all that in perspective, what do we see the goaltending situation being right now? Where do we see it going? They do have a chance to ride Lankinen if they want to, and if he continues to play well, because they don't have any back-to-backs on this road trip, or, you know, for that matter, the rest of this month. But are they going to still try and get both guys in there, or how do you see things playing out with the goaltending in the immediate short term? Because we can't really talk about the long term until we have some more certainty on Thatcher Demko.
Yeah, I think with the goaltending, to me, that's the most intriguing talking point with this team. They're going to tweak the way that they play. They're going to tweak the way that they look at pushing the pace and their defensive structure, which against Philadelphia was strong outside of a couple plays that maybe led to that Cam York goal to tie up the game. But with the Calgary game, just looking at the expected goals in that game, 5-on-5, it was 1.43. And they allow 3. So that tells you it was not as good as it needed to be with Artur Shelov's. Against Philadelphia, they allow 1 5-on-5 goal, and the expected goals in that game were 0.97. So on par with what you'd expect the opposition to score. And that, to me, if it wasn't a continuation of what we saw from last year from Artur Shelov's in the playoffs against Nashville, against Edmonton, and in the preseason of him not being able to maybe fight through traffic, having trouble with those point shots, having trouble with tracking of the puck from that area, I would not mention it so much, and I'd say it'd blip on the radar. But obviously there's a trend developing here. Obviously there is, you know, a book on him, and it's on him and Marco Chernius to sort that out and get better at that. But one thing we have to keep in mind, he hasn't played many NHL games in his career, right? Like Thatcher Demko going down with the injury and Artur Shelov's being the starter. Remember, he was the third goalie on the playoff roster last year. This is a lot coming very quickly at Artur Shelov's. His development still needs to happen. So are there problems? Of course, you know, he didn't have a good game against Calgary. But this is why you pick up Kevin Lankinen. You give Artur Shelov's an opportunity and say, hey, you did a great job in the playoffs last year, and we're going to give you a look. But if that look doesn't turn to be, you know, it doesn't show us that you're ready, well, we've got a goaltender in Kevin Lankinen who, as we saw against Philadelphia, he can make the quality saves. He's efficient in his movement, but he can also make, you know, the unbelievable save that he made with the double save, one off the pad and the other one off his left shoulder as he was laying in the crease. There is a capable veteran there. So I look at Kevin Lankinen, you know, going with the hot hand, going with the player that essentially is giving you the best chance to win and is consistent. Really, your role to back up Thatcher Demko is quite simple. Are you, when he's healthy and when he's not, are you letting in bad goals, yes or no? And unfortunately for Shelovs in his first game, he did. Lankinen did not. And I would roll with Lankinen and roll with the hot hand. So as of right now, if that's Lankinen, you go with it. And, you know, it's maybe it's a medium-sized leash, not necessarily a long leash. But I think you go with the guy that's giving you the best opportunity to win in that given moment.
Another talking point coming out of the game against the Flyers, and because it's one game, I'm not going to overanalyze it, but I think if you want to find a way that the Canucks lost that game or find a reason that the Canucks lost that game, you can look to their top players and say their top players weren't good enough. And, you know, I want to talk about this more in terms of that collective group because big surprise, we've got a lot of questions about Elias Pettersson that we're going to get to in the mailbag. So we'll save those for the last segment of the show and talking about that. But early in the season, in a game like that, you know, one goal makes the difference and you want a big goal from your big players. Now, JT Miller did score a big goal in the season opener against Calgary to tie the game late. But, you know, Pettersson, Besser, Miller, Hughes, I think it's fair to say that none of those guys had their best game against the Flyers on Friday night.
That's fair. And I thought the best player for the Canucks on that night was Connor Garland. The way he was just everywhere. Nils Höglander scores that beautiful goal. But to me, the battle level Garland was what really led the Vancouver Canucks. And when you start talking about the star players, JT Miller, yeah, he had one shot on goal, 21 minutes of ice. You know, there were moments that he looked dangerous or he could have created something, but there are other moments where you're looking and saying, okay, puck management, a little bit of an issue similar to that Calgary game where he did special things, but maybe that timing is not quite there just yet. With Elias Pettersson, I thought against Calgary, you know, he played nearly 24 minutes in that game, and I thought he was moving pretty good in the game against Philadelphia early on in the game, but as the game went on, that impact really fell off. So this is, you know, both JT, Quinn, and Elias Pettersson, they have to be difference makers for this team. And Quinn, we see it consistently enough. JT Miller, of course, with Elias Pettersson, the first half of last year, he was that. The second half, he wasn't. But with Pettersson, when he's skating, when he's, you know, shooting with confidence and making plays in the neutral zone, attacking, that's when you see him best. He's got to win those battles too, right? So he's a little bit of everything. But as that game went on, Batch, I didn't think any of those three players, their star players for Vancouver, really led the way. But, you know, from a team game perspective, remember, for 40 minutes, they were still the better team. But we're still seeing that both JT Miller and Elias Pettersson are still trying to gel with their new line mates, right? DeBrusque is still trying to fit in 5-on-5. I think he's been a little bit more noticeable on the power play. He's had more chances, but 5-on-5, we haven't seen that chemistry fully yet. And that takes time. The same goes for Danton Heinen. I thought he had a better game in terms of saw more ice against Philadelphia. But have we seen them really click? And they were possession hogs in that game against Philadelphia in certain stretches. But we haven't really seen that translate to, you know, really high quality scoring chances or offense. So it's from that perspective, I still think these are two guys that are trying to gel with their new line mates. But was it a hallmark moment for this, both of these star players for Vancouver in the forward group? No, it wasn't. And I want to say, you know, with Quinn Hughes, I think he had some challenges just handling the puck against Philadelphia. It felt like there was a lot of bobbling in the puck. It wasn't the most controlled game. And Philip Hronek as well, he had his moments as wasn't looking that solid. And like I said, not going to overreact to that, but it was just a night where the star players weren't maybe at their best.
And it's interesting to talk about building that chemistry because we saw different lines in the top six at practice on Saturday. And, you know, we have to take this with a grain of salt because Garland didn't practice and he's still dealing with the issue that held him out of the preseason finale and clearly doing a good job managing it and playing through it, but he didn't practice. Obviously, Myers didn't practice either. We'll come to talk about that in a moment. But it was Heinen on the line with Pettersson and DeBrusque, and Hoglander got moved into the spot with Miller and Besser. And we saw, you know, Garland was elevated up the lineup at times through the first two games of the season. And I do wonder about utilizing Connor Garland in a top six role until you get Dakota Joshua back and, you know, those guys have that great chemistry and you can build out that third line. But, you know, I know Thomas Drantz always bangs the drum about how Garland is a top six forward for this team. By the end of the year, in terms of minutes, he's usually deployed that way. He can have that kind of impact. So that remains to be seen what the lines will look like on Tuesday, because again, he did practice. But the fact that Rick Tocchet is already tweaking things in the top six, I think, speaks to exactly what we just discussed, which is he needs more out of his top players and his top two lines in the forward group in particular.
Well, you've also got tough matchups coming here, right? You got Tampa, which historically we know what they're all about. They've only played one game this season. Of course, their game on the weekend was postponed due to the Hurricanes in Florida. So this is a team that's going to be fresh. They're going to have a 1-2 punch of Braden Point and Anthony Cirelli. So, you know, offensive player, shutdown guy, how are you going to win that matchup? And, you know, this is a stacked line, I should add, of Braden Point, Nikita Kucherov, and Jake Guentzel. Like, Vancouver's top players are going to have to be good in that one. Against Florida, Vancouver lucked out. Sasha Barkov is injured. He's week to week. Still, that's a team that plays hard. They're the reigning cup champion. So I think it's a time where you're looking at, you're on the road, these are tough matchups, and how do you elevate your game to play a certain style where, of course, you want to be sound defensively, but one area against Philadelphia that Batch, even though they had control of that game, 5-on-5, they had the majority of chances. I was saying, you know, no high danger chances against through 40 minutes, 5-on-5. As that game went on, the chances in the middle of the ice, winning the middle of the ice, that kind of dropped off for Vancouver pretty significantly. So how do you have a sustained, you know, attack? How do you have sustained pressure throughout the game where it's not one and done? It's not you're dumping the puck in and all of a sudden you're eating pressure immediately. It's Vancouver did a fantastic job in the second period where they were the dominant team. They were leaning on Philly. But you got to have some bite to your bark too, right? You just can't have it the other way where you have possession numbers. And I think Rick Tocchet potentially looking at changes. And Connor Garland, to me, is the guy that right now, after that game, he deserves that opportunity. This guy was an absolute buzzsaw against Philadelphia. And remember, going back to that Calgary game, scores that goal. But what happens? Prior to that, he takes a big hit from Mackenzie Weegar. He plays the game the right way. And over two games, I think he's been Vancouver's best player, or pretty close to it.
We also need to talk about the injury situation on the blue line. Looks like the Canucks, to put it in the words that Rick Tocchet used, have dodged a bullet. Myers listed day-to-day, is on the trip with the team after what looked like a pretty scary injury. The fact that it doesn't look like it's going to be long-term for Myers, and you know, we'll see if and when he's able to get back in on the road trip. But that'll be important for the Canucks because, you know, it's amazing how one injury to a top four defenseman really affects your depth. Hughes and Hronek skated together at practice on Saturday. Then it was Susie, Desharnais, Forbert, Juulsen. And without Myers in the lineup, assuming that he's not able to play Tuesday against Tampa, you know, the defensive depth and particularly what you see in the top four takes a big hit. And I'm already starting to wonder if Myers misses a little bit of time here, if you have to separate Hughes and Hronek to try and balance things out so your blue line's not so top heavy.
Yeah, and this is where I think the experiment in the preseason, even though it had mixed reviews because, you know, they were in different pairings and you're trying to find a little bit more to see what Philip Hronek can do, this is why you try it out, right? Because that balance on that right-hand side really takes a hit once you put Hronek with Hughes and there's no Tyler Myers. So whether that's a one-game absence, whether that's the entire road trip, we'll see. But we've seen Quinn Hughes play with Noah Juulsen. We've seen him have that opportunity. So, you know, it's worked in certain stretches. Is it ideal? No, you don't have that same super duo. But in order to create a little bit of balance, Forbert and Desharnais have played together. That's something you probably want to lean on more so. I thought Derek Forbert played really solid against Philadelphia, showed some touch as well. With Juulsen, he's got that chemistry with Hughes. He's got that tendency. It might be a little too much for Vincent Desharnais to play alongside Soucy and Quinn Hughes, for that matter. That might be a bit of a leap for him, considering he was just a healthy scratch. So I look at that to see, okay, how are you gonna split this up a little bit? And, you know, Quinn Hughes can handle his minutes. He just played 30-plus. But that second pairing with Carson Soucy, can you get him to about maybe 21, 22 minutes? And can you get a little bit more push out of the game from Filip Hronek? So I think that having that balance, splitting them up in Tampa Bay and Florida potentially, I think you have to strongly look at it here, Batch, just to give maybe a little less of a burden on that third pair. Otherwise, it's going to be challenging, especially against a team like Tampa Bay that's going to be skating hard, trying to attack those potential mismatches.
So we'll see how things play out on the blue line and with the forward group, depending on the situation with both Garland and Myers as the Canucks head out on the road. One more segment to come here on In the Booth, and it will be entirely committed to your questions. We'll get to the mailbag next on your official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to In the Booth on your official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Brendan Batchelor and Randy Jando with you. And before we get into the mailbag, I just wanted to take a moment to mention that I'm raising money for the Canucks Autism Network as part of their Pro-Am hockey tournament that's happening the first weekend in November. I'm playing for Team Sportsnet, so we've got a bunch of guys from the station and some of our great sponsors that are raising money for this tournament and going to play in it. And, you know, I got to play in it last year, and it was a great weekend, and it's always a lot of fun. And I'm giving away a pair of tickets to the game October 28th against the Hurricanes, too. So if you go to my Twitter, at Batch Hockey, you can find the link to donate. Every $25 denomination that you donate gets you one entry into the draw for the tickets. So one entry for $25, two entries for $50, four entries for $100, and so on. Then if you retweet my post and you send me a DM showing that you made a donation, I'll give you an additional entry. And if you say that you heard about this contest right here on In the Booth, I'll give you another entry. So, hey, it pays to listen to In the Booth. It pays to follow us on social media. And let's help out the Canucks Autism Network. So thanks, Randy, for letting me have a moment to mention that, because I think it's a great cause and really important and important to us at the station. So now let's get into the mailbag. And there were a number of questions that we got about the way that this team played through the first couple of games. And let's start with Bulldog on Twitter, who writes in and says, Petey falls down a lot, and that didn't improve over the offseason. What do his legs look like in person? How much do you think he squats? This is a hilarious question, first of all. He's got strong legs. He's an NHL player. Look at his ability to skate. I'm sure he squats a lot. I haven't actually seen him squat. But he does have strong legs. It's not a strength thing for me. I think it's maybe a balance thing, or, you know, at times he gets knocked off the puck a little bit too easily. So it might be, you know, needing to build more overall weight and strength and heft to win those battles. And I think it was really interesting that he was working with Yogi Svejkovsky, their assistant coach, after practice on Saturday. And what were they working on? They were working on battles. So I know it's easy for fans to sort of, you know, snipe from the upper bowl and say, oh, look at him, he's falling down again. But if he wins his battles and he can protect the puck and create offense, then if he falls the odd time, people aren't going to care.
Yeah, and one thing is for sure, with Elias Pettersson, we've seen his speed burst through the neutral zone. When he's feeling confident, he's a tough guy to catch, right? But his body is not Sidney Crosby's either, right? Like, we're not in the gym with them. We're not allowed. We're not spotting Elias Pettersson when he's working out in the gym. We're not seeing what they're squatting. But everybody's body type is a little different. And, you know, the ultimate grinder of Sidney Crosby, or you can also see Connor Bedard is like built a little differently. Petey's a little taller, and that weight distribution's a little different. So everybody's built a little differently, but he is, you know, a strong player. We see it in his reverse hits. We see that he engages in battles and he wins battles too. So is there a room for improvement? Of course, that's why he's working on it. But and in terms of an overall strength thing, I can't speak to that just because I'm not there, Batch, in the room with them when they're working out in the gym. We're not allowed there, but I'm not gonna, I'm not going to do an analysis or a breakdown of his legs because I don't know if we're in a position to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Here is another question about Pettersson, and it comes in from the Blazing Pucks. The PD slander is outrageous two games into the season, but there is a section of fans who feel frustrated to see the elite superstar suddenly fade. Do you think he will reclaim the spark eventually, or should we prepare to adjust expectations? And I think this is a great way to frame it because obviously he struggled last year. Obviously, you know, had he played a lot better in the playoffs, it could have meant a different result for the Canucks. And because of that, there is a hyper focus on him to start this season. But honestly, I don't think he's been as bad as some out there might want you to think. I think it's, you know, rose-colored glasses or however you want to describe it, because you're applying the way he's played in these two games to the context of how he struggled down the stretch last season. To me, the answer to this question, Randeep, is not if he will reclaim that spark, as the Blazing Pucks puts it on Twitter, but it's when he reclaims that spark and gets back to being that elite level player that we've all seen him be.
Yeah, Batch, the thing for me with Elias Pettersson is I don't think the skill is undeniable. We see it. We've seen the shot. We've seen his vision, even as recently as that great pass to Carson Soucy, backhand sauce, you know, a week ago. He is that type of player. He's going to bring that, and he has that in his skill set. It comes down to confidence for me. When I watch Elias Pettersson play, when he's going, he's moving his feet, he's decisive, he knows where he wants to go. When he's not moving his feet, it's a confidence thing, and there's peaks and valleys in his game right now. So is it, you know, are there certain moments where you're saying, all right, you need to be stronger in your skates, you need to be a little bit more decisive, you need to, you know, be moving your feet rather than reaching? Yes, but I really think that comes down to, you know, between the ears. And as he gets, you know, at that age now, which of course getting that contract is going to add pressure, but some players like a Nathan MacKinnon, they leap into that pressure. Connor McDavid, they leap into that pressure at a certain point in their career. Other guys are a little bit slower to kind of get into it, right? They're a little bit, you know, maybe it doesn't happen right away. When it's really good, like we saw at the beginning of last year, nobody could touch Elias Pettersson. He was the best player in the NHL for that stretch. And then the second half, when there's a little bit of doubt maybe in your physical ability because you have an injury or you're dealing with something, that confidence falls off. So I think with Pettersson, it's just the volatility in his confidence. The skill has been there. It's always there. It's just how do you get your confidence to a point where it's not dropping so low, where you're maybe there's going to be peaks and valleys, but instead of going down to 20, you know, it goes down to 50 or 60. There's currently, you know, when he's confident, it's at 100. But there's a little bit of volatility of when he's feeling it. That's one of the things that elite players need to get used to. They need to say, even at my, when I'm not at my best, how am I contributing to my team? And how am I able to be a difference maker when I might be dealing with something or my confidence is low? And I think with Elias Pettersson, that's the next step to say, bring that consistency, bring that, raise that baseline, so to speak.
Yeah, and that's something we hear talked about all the time in the NHL is consistency. And this is something that Patrick Alvin specifically called out, not just Pettersson, but Hoglander and Besser for in recent days too, is find a way to be more consistent night in, night out. And the best way I've heard it described is you can't be a 10 out of 10 one night and a 2 out of 10 the next night. You've got to be like a 6 or a 7 at least every night to be a really strong, consistent NHL player. Can Pettersson get back to that? Yes. Is part of this maybe a maturation process for him? I think that's certainly something that we could discuss too, but I need more of a sample size than two games before I'm really going to start worrying about Elias Pettersson. Okay, we got time for a couple more questions. Both JD and Austin and Langley wrote in. Austin said, the Canucks are 0-2 without PDG in the lineup. Is it time to get Riccio's Bello back in there? And JD says, do you think Rick Tocchet will look at considering Phil DiGiuseppe back in the fold? The answer to this is yes. They will consider Phil DiGiuseppe. Tocchet has spoken about, even though he went down, he's still in the mix. But it appears right now anyway that Arshdeep Bains is ahead of him on that list because he was recalled first.
Yes, and with Phil DiGiuseppe, you know what you're getting with the player. He's got that, you know, wall guy, inside guy mentality. He's going to give his all. I think with this team right now, they're just trying to see if there's some new additions to this lineup that can offer the same. And with Atu Ratu, you got a player that can play down the middle. He's giving you a little something. And alongside Pugh Suter, of course, you kind of got to have to, where Ratu wins in a conversation is the faceoffs, and that's really been keeping him up. I thought he had a pretty decent game. He played a physical brand of hockey, got a little bit more ice time in the Philly game than he did against Calgary. Now, with Arshdeep Bents, that's another player that they really like. They liked his preseason. They like his speed that he's been able to offer this season compared to last year. His first couple of strides are a lot quicker. He's engaging in battles. So it's just a matter of, all right, one of these young guys or both of these young guys have played a strong game, and can they add a little something, maybe a little bit more offensive pop? We saw Arshdeep Bents score two power play goals in the preseason. Is that an added wrinkle to his game? At the AHL level, we saw him score last year. We saw him put up points. Given the opportunity, is he in a better place to add some speed, add some, you know, battle level, and then a little bit more offensive pop? Does he have a higher ceiling than a PDG? PDG is a player that Rick Tocchet loves because you know what you're going to get from him, but maybe Arshdeep Bents is a player that you can throw up in the top six or on a power play too and get a little bit more offense from him. I think that's the experiment here. And if it works out, maybe Bents can stay up. If not, PDG's ready to come up.
All right, lightning round. We've got 2 minutes left in the show. We've got two questions left. So in under a minute for each one, let's start with Huggy Bear, who says, cycling through power play coaches, strategies, and personnel, what's been the issue over the last year and a half? And my quick answer to this, Randeep, is when they're struggling, they're too static. I haven't seen that from them yet this year. I thought even though they went 0-5 against the Flyers, they had some good looks and were maybe a little bit unlucky to fail to score in that game. And it wouldn't surprise me if the power play starts trending in the right direction on this road trip.
Yeah, I think the Philadelphia, the first two power plays, they were looking strong, right? You had the Canucks, when they're going with this new formation, they're fluid, they're moving around, there's a lot of rotation, and early on we saw that. Late, as the game went on, the entries, the confidence really went out the window. So I'm optimistic. I think adding Jake DeBrusk in the lefty shot there is going to be, in the long term, exactly what this needs. They just need to get comfortable, and DeBrusk is not quite there yet. He'll get there, but I like the fluid nature of the power play, especially early on in that Philadelphia game.
And the last question from Justin in East Van. How can the Canucks manage Quinn Hughes' time on ice through the grind of an 82-game season? And I actually think they did a really good job of this last year, where I honestly thought he could have played more in the regular season than he did, and they limited his ice time. Obviously, the game against the Flyers is an outlier because Myers gets hurt on his first shift of the game, and so Hughes has to play 31 minutes, I think it was, because the game went to overtime too. That's not going to happen every single night. I'm not concerned about how they manage Hughes' ice time.
Well, one thing is, you know, you got to get the lead, right? Generally, if you are playing with a lead, you can split up those minutes a little bit more. You can spread the love and manage his minutes. Another option, and we just talked about this, is if you split up Hughes and Hronek, you might be able to give that second pair a little bit more and give Quinn a little bit of a rest. But listen, this is the Norris winner. He's going to probably play about 24, 25 minutes a game. That's just the way it is. And I will say this, if you play with a lead and you're able to hold on to that lead, probably makes life a little bit easier for him because he could see the bench just a little bit more.
And that does it for this week's edition of In the Booth. Again, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you on Tuesday when the Canucks open the road trip against the Lightning. 4 o'clock faceoff, pregame at 3, right here on your official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.